Okay. Hey guys, welcome to the Dark Light Podcast. I'm not Jen.
I'm not Joe.
And today's episode is going to be on Jane Batista. Dun 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 dun.
Dun 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 dun.
Dun dun. Okay. All right, so we are drinking our grower spurts out of Jen's Dark Light merch that she made us.
Not that you can see, but it's here.
But you can hear it while I tap on it. Okay. All right, so this is a sad story. Let me just say
that. I think they're all pretty sad.
Yeah, but like the life is sad.
Yeah.
The life is sad. It's a sad enough life. Round here.
I agree.
Okay. On December 18th, 1961, Nellie Ann Dawes Osborne gave birth to a little girl they named Jane. Jane was described as pale, thin, 5'7", with red, wavy hair and blue eyes.
She wasn't flashy in her design. She didn't normally wear makeup. She was naturally beautiful. Dawn and Nellie would raise their family as Christians.
In Jane's younger years, she was described as nice, outgoing, could always make a friend. Jane loved everything about her religion. When she attended public school for a short amount of time, a few fights broke out, which caused Nellie to switch Jane and her sister into a Christian private school.
To be able to attend this school, you had to pass two exams, one academic and one test on faith, which Jane passed with flying colors. Jane was very smart, earning straight A's all throughout school.
By the time she turned 20, she vowed to never read another Bible again. Jane and her sister, Dorothy, would grow up richer than most.
Their grandfather was none other than Benjamin Cloyce. Correct?
Yeah.
Of the Funderburk. The founder of the Funderburk. Founder Burke Builders, holy, a highly sought out construction company.
Jane would often feel left out of the family. She claimed that Dorothy was a favorite, which upset Jane profusely. This also caused a feud between the two sisters, who only talked when they had to.
Even though Jane felt left out by her parents, she had a deep connection with her grandma who would comfort her when she could.
Nellie recalled one incident that terrified her greatly. When Jane was 19, she went to use Nellie's car. Not very often would Nellie say no to using the car, but this time she did.
This enraged Jane greatly. She was screaming her head off. She screamed and yelled for so long and so loudly, Nellie went to hug Jane to try and calm her down, which enraged Jane even more than she already was.
She started punching her mom, first in the head and then in the stomach. This would be the first time that she, like, physically beat her mom. But she beat her up so badly that she was being treated in the hospital. Nellie never laid charges on Jane for this incident, but Nellie would never look at her the same. Jane scared her a lot.
Jane attended college off and on between 1979 and 1988, but she would never go on to earn a degree. During this time is where she would meet her sweetheart, a man from
Belize.
Armando Batista. Soon, the two would travel back to Belize, where they would wed.
None of Jane's family would be in attendance. When they arrived back in Chicago, Dawn would be the one to pick the two up. Shortly after the marriage was official, problems would arise. Armando couldn't keep a job, which led to lots of money issues.
Jane would be able to find work in a...
I've never heard that store. Tell me more.
What is this word again? I can't.
Clerical
position at an electrical company. The money would continue to be tight and even tighter when 8 months after they wed, Jane found out she was pregnant. On August 25th, 1982, Jason Victor was born.
Just going back to the clerical, it's like a receptionist position.
Yeah, we discussed that before. Oh. My brain was not processing the word again.
I need to change my laugh so bad. I
need to change my brain.
After Jason's first birthday, Jane would leave Armando. She couldn't deal with the fighting and the unsteadiness anymore. Armando would try over and over to get Jane back. Jane would not give in, though. On one occasion, Armando went to Jane's house to beg for her back. Jane had enough and threatened to get him deported if he deported back to Belize.
April 7th, 1984 was like any other day for Jane. She took Jason out to do some errands around town. The town of
Wakaken?
Wakaken, where they, fuck if I know, looks gibberish to me, where they had been living in a small apartment complex.
I was going to Google it, but I'm not. We don't say it very much, so. On the way back to the apartment, they drove west along Sunset Avenue, which would take them by Jane's place of work. While driving past the parking lot, she saw something that she recognized.
Armando's car. Jane was annoyed that he had now come to her workplace. She went to investigate why he was there. Soon, she would be calling the police.
Armando was dead in the front seat of his 1975 Chevy Monte Carlo, a bullet hole straight through his chest with the .357 revolver on the ground of the car.
When homicide detectives arrived, they found that he had been dead for at least 3 hours since rigor mortis had already set in, along with how soaked the seats were in blood, meaning he had been bleeding for quite a while. Armando had left a suicide note that basically placed the blame of suicide on Jane for not loving him anymore.
Police found it strange that Jane was the one that found Armando. She was his estranged wife. I cannot, like, my lips, like, I don't know how to, like, describe this, but, like, juicy. It's just, like, juice coming out. She was his estranged wife. The investigators did their job as they should have, and even with how suspicious they were of Jane, there was nothing to link this to a homicide.
It wasn't just authorities that had found her suspicious, but neighbors, too. With all the talk around the town, Jane became very anxious. Jane tried to hold herself together by getting a part-time job and attending college classes.
Quira, who is Armando's sister, lived in the Florida area. She wasn't a big fan of Jane. She blamed Jane for the death of her brother. If she didn't pull the trigger, she drove him to the point of suicide.
Although Quira didn't love Jane around, Jane was the mother of her nephew Jason. The only way Quira and Jason could see each other was if Jason was, or if Jane was around.
Quira loved to bring over immigrants like her for dinner once in a while. At one of these dinners, Jane would meet Jose Montego. Jose and Jane quickly fell in love. Jose didn't just fall in love with Jane, though. He also loves Jason as if he were his own.
Jane didn't approve of this. You see, Jason reminded Jane of Armando, who she hated. Jason would get the brunt end of this. Jose would go on to notice the more he hung out with Jason, the more Jane would react very poorly.
Jose had been addicted to alcohol, and in the beginning of their relationship, Jose would limit the amount of alcohol until he completely quit with the help of Jane.
Jose wanted to marry Jane shortly after they moved in together, but Jane didn't want to lose the money she would get from the state for raising Jason alone.
Jose recalls the moments when Jason was around 3 years old. He would wet the bed. Jane was so embarrassed. She would whip Jason with whatever she had in hand, a belt, a wooden spoon, and it wasn't just little taps, this was whips. And let me be clear, that is normal for a 3 year old. To wet the bed.
I was going to say to wet the bed, not to be whipped.
Yes.
Jose hated when he seen Jane treat Jason this way. Jose had an alcoholic, abusive father growing up, and he remembered the fear he endured. The way Jane treated Jason reminded Jose of his own childhood. All he wanted to do was protect the young child.
Jose would admit to having a temper, one that would match Jane's. He didn't like to show it, but when Jane lashed out, all he could do was lash back out.
Especially when it came to Jason. Jose finally had enough and had to get out, but there was one little problem with that. Jane was pregnant. Matthew Montego
Yeah.
Was born on Independence Day, 1987.
Jane seemed happy with this little child. Not like she had been with Jason, she seemed to love and care about Matthew. Jose wanted to work on things, now that a new baby was in the picture.
He tried to forget about everything that they had been through. A fresh start. The only problem was, with all the affection and love that Matthew was getting, Jason was still getting in trouble for the smallest things.
Her temper towards Jason hadn't changed. One thing that bothers Jose a lot was how secretive Jane was. Jose felt like he didn't really know the mother of his child.
If she found him snooping around at mundane things, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. She would lose her mind.
Jane would tell Jose a story about Armando that the authorities heard a different version of.
The night he committed suicide, you remember she said she drove past and found him? Well, according to Jose, that was not the story she told him.
The way Jose would recall, Jane was at work when Armando came to talk, little baby Jason in the backseat of the car. While the two of them were having a conversation, Armando pulled the gun out and shot himself right in front of Jane, with Jason in the car.
Jane grabbed Jason, hysterical, and then drove home. When she was able to calm down, she drove back to the scene, alerted a security guard of what she found, and the story remains the same from there.
That's why she hated Armando so much. How could he commit such a horrendous act in front of her? Blame her. Jason had no control over who his father was or what he did. But that didn't change Jane's mind. Jason still reminded her of his father.
The day that affected Jose the most was when Jane came home from her parents. Matthew, still a baby. Jane came home so angry from the visit, she reached for Matthew, lifted him in the air, and she just dropped him.
Jose couldn't believe what he had just witnessed. Jose flew into a rage over this, especially with everything that he had witnessed with Jason. Jose grabbed her by the shirt and told her if she ever did it again, he would kill her.
He then proceeded to slap her hard across the face. After a struggle ensued, Jose grabbed her by the throat and threw her against the ground.
Neighbors must have heard the commotion because an officer came by and arrested Jose. Jane would soon file to drop the charges, which was granted. Jose was seriously done now. He packed up and left. He did come back, though, after Jane begged him and he remembered his little sweet Matthew and Jason.
Jane became obsessed with the thought of moving to Florida. Jose didn't like the thought of this, but Jane convinced him to do a family vacation for a week, which turned into two, and then a month.
Jose obviously lost his job over this vacation, but was able to get it back from being such a hard worker. This wouldn't last. Jane would convince him to move to California.
They packed the kids and moved to San Diego at the end of 1988. While the trip to Florida had an uplifting mood change on Jane, San Diego made her become more odd. For example, she would go on to allow the family to have a diet of only lettuce and veggies.
Jose became so fed up with Jane, her obsession with him, her mental instability, the fighting, the mental and physical abuse. The end came when Jane pulled a knife at Jose and started ripping his clothes with it. He was tired. He didn't fight back. He just packed his stuff and left. Even though Jane told Jose that if he did leave, she would tell the authorities that he had sexually assaulted Matthew and he would never be able to see him again.
Jose basically told her that if she did that, he would come back for her worse. Jane never called the police on him. Jose fell into a deep depression, but he knew he had to come out of it. Jose tried to see the kids, but when Jane found him with another woman, it was hard. She became very jealous, asking who the whore was.
Jane had called the police and told them that Jose had beaten and tried to rape her. This was a lie. Jose couldn't admit to what he had done, so instead he pleaded guilty to spousal abuse and served 1 year in jail and had to pay a $100 fine.
He would go on to serve 3 months of his 1 year sentence. When he got out of jail, he tried to connect with the boys, but he found out that Jane disconnected the phones and moved on. Jose would never see his children for a very long time.
Jane claimed that people were after her. She claimed that a professional singer by the name of Duncan Sheik stole her song and was making money off of it. She also became obsessed with the thought that he was trying to kill her.
Jane tried many times to get in touch with him. He didn't know her, so he stayed his distance while having his team keep an eye on her. After that obsession, she was convinced she was being watched all the time.
The boys couldn't do anything with their mom being so paranoid. She would hear people in the yard or talking to her through the vents.
Jane would get so paranoid that she had people living in the bushes in the backyard or on the roof of her house. She would call the cops on many occasions, once even claiming that the neighbors hired them to live in her yard. When cops showed up to the neighbors, they kind of laughed off. They knew she was ludicrous.
Can you imagine that? Like, if somebody, like, called the cops on you and was like, you have hired somebody to live in my backyard.
Like, that would be really weird.
Like, how would you deal with that? Like, obviously you would know that she's a little cuckoo up in the head area, but, like,
yeah,
in the nicest way possible. I know that it was mental illness, but at this point nobody knew.
Yeah.
But that would be so, you'd be like, what? What are you talking about? Jane got tired of being stalked, so she moved without warning. Jane had very erratic behavior. The boys learned to just stay quiet about it, or they would get the rap of it. She had her good spouts. I don't know where I read stood in there at all. She had her good spouts, but they would only last a little while before she would take on the persona of being stalked and watched.
She truly feared someone was out to get her. When Jane was gone, the boys would go into the yard and play hockey. A neighbor named Dan was a hockey coach, so he would come over and give the boys tips and advice, especially Matthew, since he would say he wanted to go pro.
Matthew and Dan would even go out golfing, which Matthew really enjoyed. He was really good at it.
Only once did a neighbor call Child Protective Services on Jane, which didn't go well. She just told them to get the fuck off her property and slam the door in their face, which no one ever showed up again.
If they had, maybe things would have gone a little bit differently. Maybe the boys could have had a life that they deserved instead of the one that they were living. But that never happened, so there's no point in playing the what-if game.
Jason wasn't popular in school, but he thoroughly enjoyed it. Maybe it was because it got him away from his mom. Nevertheless, he very much enjoyed science. He even said he wanted to become a lawyer or a doctor one day.
He had decent grades throughout, even the horror he endured at home. He had lots of computer skills. One day, he got the courage to ask a girl out, and she said yes to his surprise. But he ended up having to cancel after Jane found out. She told him that he couldn't date. Nobody would want to date him anyways.
Jason's passion was his studies. Matthew took a different route. He loved the sports. One of the times Jane was sane, she signed Matthew up for hockey.
Jason had the opportunity to graduate high school early, becoming a senior. He thought that Jane was going to throw a fight, but she was actually ecstatic that he would go on to do this and follow in her footsteps, as she had also graduated early. Plus, this meant that he could work sooner and help the family out.
Jason was now a senior. Matthew's hockey stride wouldn't last long. Jane lost it on one of the coaches, which was normal, but this coach had enough and got Matthew kicked off the team. The coach didn't want to lose Matthew and felt bad that he had to go, but his mother, Jane, made it so hard on everyone else around.
Sorry if you guys heard me pouring my drink there. Jane would tell Matthew that everybody was paid to watch him and that nobody really wanted him there. It was everybody just being paid off. This sent Jason into a rage, protecting his brother.
Jane was so afraid, she went into the kitchen and grabbed a knife. She started pointing it at Jason, asking who got to him. Jason was afraid and grabbed Matthew's hockey stick that was laying there. If she swung the knife at him, he was going to protect himself.
Jane dropped the knife and grabbed the other hockey stick and swung it at Jason, hitting him hard in the head. The gash was full of blood. That night, he ended up in the ER. Without hesitation, Jane threatened the boys that if they told the truth about what happened, they would be in serious trouble. The cut ended up needing 7 stitches and left a 3-inch scar.
When Jason turned 18, the family was living in Wildomar, California. Jason had a working a job working the front desk at County Inn in Corona. With this, Jane decided to buy a second car. Since sharing with Jason while he was working was unpractical, Jane and Jason's names were both on the car. Jason as the co-signer, since Jane had no income and couldn't qualify for a car loan.
Jason thought that this car would be his, but Jane said, no, you can have the old Accord. This infuriated him, as this was the ugly car. But at least it was a car. Living in Wildermar wouldn't last long, as Jane was sure once again that the neighbors were being paid to watch her. For the next year, Jane refused to settle into a home. This meant that the family would be living motel to motel.
The worst for the boys was when Jane refused to pay for a hotel and they would all have to sleep in the car. Jason begged his mom to buy an apartment, as he was still working and getting ready out of the car was difficult. During this period of time, Jason contemplated suicide many times, as life was unbearable for him.
Matthew couldn't even attend a full week of school, which for Jane just meant that he would have to be homeschooled, and then nobody could find them for sure.
Jason's grades were dropping and was told if his grades didn't improve by next quarter, he would be suspended. He couldn't get his grades up and he was barred from campus.
Jason enrolled at San Jacinto Community College long enough for his grades to improve, and then he went back to San Bernardino College. Sorry if I mess those up. After 14 months of working at the hotel, he squared another job at the Holiday Inn in Ontario by February 2001.
Though his bosses loved him, his co-workers didn't. One co-worker told their bosses, "It's him or me." This meant Jason was warned and told if he didn't improve, that he would lose his job.
Jason ended up being trained that night for... Jason ended up being trained for night auditor for the job. Then a classmate invited Jason to join him in the chemistry club. He loved the idea of that.
He attended every meeting he could. He was very active in the club. Jason would even help out the club, did events for kids to engage in science, and he loved it.
Jason finally told Jane that he had enough. He was going to go look for his own apartment. Jane thought he was bluffing.
Jason packed up that morning and was going to stay with a friend from high school who had just got his own apartment. Jane ruined that for him, though.
Jane showed up at his work. Jason knew what was about to happen, so he let her outside, where she just screamed at him. He took it. He just stood there with all of his coworkers watching. When she left, taking the vehicle, leaving him stranded, he walked it back into the hotel and told them that he needed a change of address form as soon as possible.
Jason ended up having to talk to a coworker into giving him a ride to school. After school, Jason had a classmate drive him to Ontario, so he knew he would make it to work. Jason had to call his mom to pick him up, and when she did, she gloated about how he would never make it on his own. This is when the thought struck. This was the first time he thought about killing his mom.
Jason would talk to Matt about how he wished that she was dead. Matt laughed it off, not thinking his brother was serious. Jane got a grip back into reality by this time, so the thought passed. And that's where we're going to leave you for part one. Dun, dun, dun.
Thanks for listening to the Dark Light Podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at dark.klight.podcast_.
And on Twitter at darklightpod1.
You can email us at darklightpodcast@hotmail.com with any episode requests, story of yours. You might want to be on an upcoming sequel called Crowd Chronicles.
We will see you next Tuesday, and to remember,
keep your lights on.